Vernon is also from the Employee Benefits Work Group requesting authorization to amend Section 1718.84 of the Milwaukee County Code of General Ordinances as it pertains to sick leave policies regarding sick allowance accruals and payouts or credit at retirement. This is referred to the Committee on Personnel also. This was before us before we laid it over for one cycle. Personnel sent it to the board, and the board returned the file back to personnel.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Ms. Miller just said, this is a little bit procedurally different in the status it's in. It's here really as a layover from the prior cycle from finance, but it's in front of personnel as a return back from the county board. So what you have in front of you is the same thing you had in front of you at the last cycle in terms of the actual resolution and ordinance amendment. With respect to that resolution and ordinance amendment, I am requesting, or the work group is requesting, an amendment. It's a cleanup provision. It's in your packet. Basically, when I drafted the prior ordinance amendment, I missed a subsection in Chapter 1718 that we just need to amend to be consistent. Assuming you want to follow this policy, we need to add that amendment. Then, in addition to the prior resolution and ordinance amendment that you have before you and the requested amendment to that, you have a report that was done to try and provide additional detail, which is what I understood the committee to be requesting. So the report is several pages and goes through a little bit of the process of what the work group, you know, analyzed, what it discussed, what its rationale was for the recommendations it made. Attached to that, you'll see the information the work group reviewed on the policies of other governmental entities in Wisconsin, multiple pages, and it lays out the various sick allowance and accrual policies of various other entities. This information is provided primarily to show you that a cap of 960 hours on accruals is not uncommon, fairly common cap. They're all over the map, frankly, but 960 is probably the most common cap. State of Wisconsin doesn't have a cap. They vary, but this is our justification for why we picked 960. Also attached is a, well, there's a fiscal note, obviously, and there's also a graph, I believe, or a graphic representation of this sort of three-bucket theory that we've talked about or I've talked about and trying to explain how that would work in terms of the accruals and the legal protections for the various sick allowance amounts. I thought that made the packet. I guess it didn't make the packet.
The graph did.
Right.
The rest
okay.
Buckets.
And the graph, just to be clear, is illustrative only. It picks the example of an AFSCME employee, a pre-94 AFSCME employee. Obviously, it varies a little bit by union and by you know employee status. The numbers are all a little bit different in terms of the benefits, but this is just to illustrate how this process, how the accounting works and how the process works. And I can go through as much or as little detail as you'd like. I could probably sit and talk here for a long time if you want.
Supervisor DeBrun?
I have a question directly on this, and I know this is something that both AFSCME and the Federation of Nurses have been asking for. Can you explain to me what the impact would be if the county decided to exempt the folks hired after 94? Yeah, to allow them to purchase health insurance after retirement. Now, I know at least with the nurses, I'm not as clear with the AFSCME, but I know at least with the nurses, they were also saying they were willing to accept the cap. So if you assume that if the cap is still in place and they can purchase instead of so if they still only get the 960, but they unused, they could purchase, is there a fiscal cost to the county, and what might that range be? And then also, if the cap is not in place, if we go back to the status quo, then it seems to me you've got a major savings issue. But could you just kind of jump to that bottom line? Because I couldn't really figure it out from what I was looking through, and I just may have missed it, but I'm just unclear.
I will defer for the actual numbers to Mr. Mansky, but just in terms of the concept, What you have before you is a proposal that would, back up, people, even post 94 AFSCME employees, we'll use that as the example. If we have one of those employees who has 1,500 hours of sick allowance, nothing in this proposal will change that fact. And the ability of that person to use those, assuming they don't use any more sick allowance while they're working here, they can use that 1,500 hours to pay for post-retirement health insurance. However, if you have a post-94 AFSCME employee who has 200 hours of sick allowance currently, the cap that we are creating, or the elimination of payout post-1112, would mean that all they would be able to use for post-retirement health insurance is that 200 hours. If you eliminate the exemption or the provision we have to stop that payout and the use of those accrued hours in payout, that individual, in addition to the 200 hours, would now be able to accrue another 760 hours up to the 960.
Oh.
And so they will have an additional 760 hours that they can use towards post-retirement health insurance. So legally, you can do whichever you want. There's no legal issue here in terms of your ability to do whatever policy you want to do. But there clearly is a cost associated with, in my example, that 760 hours. It's going to vary by employee, and how much they use sick allowance between now and their retirement and things like that. And for the numbers, Mr. Mansky's here.
Good morning. Scott Mansky from the Department of Administrative Services. When we put together the fiscal note and reviewed it with people, the purpose was is that it was a broad fiscal note to deal with making a change for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
The intent was not to do a split based upon whether you were using it as a cash payout or as a post 90 or as to use for health insurance. And as Mr. Grady has indicated, basically what's happening is for purposes of sick leave use while you are employed, this proposal would put a cap of 960 hours for the maximum amount that you could accrue, or if you're already over that amount, you could use the amount that you have over if you have it as of that existing date. For purposes of payout, you in essence would be capped at whatever your balance is right now. As of January 1st, 2012, and for the nurses, it would be January 1st, 2013, but you would be capped at that level. You couldn't get any more amount that could be used either for cash or for post-retirement health care. One of the schedules that I did in my fiscal note provided on the very last page of my fiscal note, page 6, provided a table by union giving the number of people that are in a cash payout versus a health care purchase. So the total number of people that were eligible, and this was based upon December 31st, 2010, was 4,187 people had the ability to have sick leave balances. 1,553 of them could get a cash payout. 2,634 could get a health care purchase. And it's broken down by union in there. And so in essence, when I'm looking at this, I kind of, since I was told about this potential provision, I'm in essence looking at this as like two-thirds, one-third, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at that, I go back to the previous page, page 5, and I look at column C there, and most of the people who have less than 960 hours are the people who are, or two-thirds of that group, are the people who are going to be getting health insurance at retirement. So column C, what that's telling me is that the liability is increasing each year by about $783,000 for that group. Or if you look at about two-thirds of that number, it would be about the liabilities increasing about $500,000 or $600,000. That's the liability. That's not the budgetary impact. That's just what is increasing in the liability. Now, there are a few people each year right now who are retiring with the health insurance. it's probably less than 100 people right at this present time. So more of the impact of this from a budgetary standpoint, if you make this change, the proposal of change would be to not cap, as my understanding is, for the people who are eligible for post-retirement health insurance using their sick leave balance, would be not to cap them, except their cap would then be 960 hours. They would have the same sick leave usage cap as a cap for purposes of using that retirement. That is my understanding.
But I think what Mr. Ransky is saying, that's not what the proposal from the work group is, but in response to your question, Supervisor Ragone, is that if we eliminate the provision in here, which eliminates the payout, so in other words, we allow the payout to continue going forward, then you're going to create a payout of up to 960 additional hours, potentially, for someone who has none right now. That's what you're talking about.
That's what I'm talking about.
There may be multiple requests. All I know is that there's and obviously Ms. Junk is going to speak in a few minutes, but there was at least an earlier request from FNIP about allowing the payouts for health insurance after retirement to continue, but accepting the cap, and I didn't know if that then took away the increased financial costs, and I think I was hearing from you that actually it wouldn't, because if somebody only had 200 hours now, that they could increase up to 960, and obviously, though, if the whole cap is gone, which is a status quo, would that, I'm assuming that would be the $780,000 a year more, or?
Yeah, what I'm my understanding right now is that the savings that in essence you would get by what is being proposed, by what is the ordinance here right now, would in essence be potentially down the road is a decrease to the liability of $1,080,000 a year. That's what column C is. Based upon what's proposed right now, the sick leave liability of what could be paid out retirement would decrease by this, you know, you wouldn't increase the liability by $1,080,000 a year. And you wouldn't save those dollars till down the road somewhere when people would retire. Okay. By changing that, in essence, what is there right now is that what is under the current proposal is that people who, once they become, once they retire, or once the proposal has two things. One is placing a cap on the amount of sick leave usage that you can use while you're employed, and the second is placing a cap on those people when they retire. The cap for sick leave usage would be 960 hours while you are an employee. The cap upon retirement would be based upon what your balance is as of, for most of the group, December or January 1st, 2012. So if you only have 200 hours, that's all you have. And any sick leave usage going forward will decrease from that number. That's the way it's currently described in here.
Mm-hmm.
So for that payout at retirement. You still get it if you get sick or whatever, you know, during the time you can use it while you're here as an employee, you know, but you can't get it paid out at retirement. Under what I'm understanding as a possible proposal, the cap, which I said which would be as of January 1st, 2012, would be eliminated. If you're at 200, now you could go up to 960 to be able to use to buy health insurance at retirement. That's my understanding of what's being proposed.
Well, it hasn't been proposed yet. That was
okay.
The basis of the question.
That's the basis of the question. And that cost would be an increase to the liability, not a budgetary cost yet, because a lot of those people aren't eligible for retirement yet. But it would increase the liability by about $500,000 a year, which would then become a liability, an expense in the budget, you know, you're looking at maybe 10 years down the road as these people become eligible for retirement. There's a very small group that's retiring right now that has this eligibility. There's less than 100 people that are getting this at the present time.
And then my final question, maybe more for the county exec's office, but that some of those multiple proposals or some of those concerns have been, you know, kind of out there for a couple months now, and I wanted to know whether the county executive's office supports the proposal from the work group or whether or not they support some other option.
Good morning, Chairman, Supervisors. The county executive originally had a lower cap that he had was hoping that would pass. We believe that the cap of 960 hours is a compromise that we are willing to make.
So any other some of the other modification requests that have been asked that he does not support?
The modification requests
from the unions? There's a couple different.
The one letter I've seen, you know, I think that the cost savings have not been fully vetted. You know, I'm trying to kind of grasp what Scott is explaining today as much as I can. But I think that ultimately the county executive is interested in maintaining as much level of service for the taxpayers and the constituents of the county as possible while respecting the employees' benefits at the same time. And we believe a cap of 960 is a compromise in doing so.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, just so it's clear, I mean, I've heard it said a couple times about the county executive supporting the lower cap of 240 hours. Under the county executive's earlier proposal, he didn't cap the payouts. So if you had zero sick
right.
leave now, you could have been paid out up to 240 hours. Under this proposal, although it's 960, you're capped. You won't get paid for any additional sick leave accrued after the end of this year. So there is a fundamental difference. So when you hear that they supported a lower cap, they weren't capping the payouts for any sick payouts after this, whereas this proposal does, and that's reflected in the fiscal note.
Okay. Can I just
ask?
And the correct me if I'm wrong. The reason we went with the 960, in addition to not only it's more of the general experience, it does provide for additional allowances for folks who have serious chronic illnesses, whereas the 240 that could or whatever the original was could be used up very quickly. And so that was I think, at least to me, a key reason because while you can't cash it out or pay it out, is you know, and that's a negative. One of the positives is the 960 does give people an ability to handle a major chronic illness and still have funding for that. Is that correct?
Chairman, Supervisor, exactly. The work group certainly examined a few different proposals with short-term disability.
Right.
It is much cheaper to allow people to accrue time, sick time, for use for that than to and not pay them out at retirement for any unused sick time, either through cash or through sick post-retirement health insurance, than it is to purchase short-term disability insurance on behalf. And that's something that we looked into.
And then finally, in this change over, in either any of these proposals, years ago, I remember there was an employee who needed additional sick leave, and employees donated their sick leave to that person. Is that even still allowed now, or is it something that would be prohibited from any of these plans so that if somebody really had a catastrophic illness or their child did, employees could still donate under these plans as long as it followed the caps and all that?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, that ordinance that provides for that is not being changed here.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Supervisor Mayo?
So let's go to...
thank you.
Yes. Let's go to this, your bucket. So I make sure I understand how your bucket worked right here. 960 hours. If you post, you came after December 31st, 1993, you cannot purchase any health insurance with that $960, correct?
If I can, I'm going to step back. Can I walk you through this? Because that's sort of half right and half wrong. So.
See, don't be a lawyer with me. Come on. Work with me. Come on.
Well, I want to give you the accurate information.
Yeah. Oh, we don't want. No, we ain't going back tomorrow. All right,
this is complicated. There's no question about it. That's one of the reasons for trying to create a graphic of this. Is that, and this is an example. If you have someone who is hired, let's say they were hired on January 1st, 1994.
Okay.
At that point in time, up until February 1st of 2007, if you look at this, the first bucket, they could accrue sick allowance to an unlimited amount.
Correct.
And if they never touched it, it's paid out at 100% of retirement, or it's being allowed to use for health insurance credit at 100% of retirement. So if you had $1,500, they get $1,500 at retirement. Because of the change in the collective bargaining agreement, from February 1st of 07 until, under this proposal, the end of this year, 12/31/11, anything that goes that's accrued during your employment during those 4 years, 5 years, is, and if it's not touched, not used, it's paid out 25% at retirement.
Okay.
And then so starting...
Okay, since it's 25% paid out to them, can I use the other 75% to purchase some health insurance?
Well, it's not paid out. 25% used as a credit for health insurance.
Okay.
That's what I meant.
So in other words, 75% just go back to the bottom line of Milwaukee County.
Of that second bucket,
correct.
That's correct. It's
right.
not. It's right. No. If they don't use it by the time they retire, it's of no value.
Okay.
Then the third bucket is the one we're creating by this ordinance amendment, which starts January 1, 2012. And if you already have 960 hours in buckets one and two together, nothing is going to go into this third bucket at all, unless you use some while you're working here, and that you drop below 960. Then you can start adding some to this third bucket. So if you have 1,500 hours, for whatever reason, you use 1,000 of it, now you're down to 500 hours. You can start accumulating in the third bucket up to 460 more. However, if that's where you are at the time of retirement, the 460 in the third bucket is of no value to you because this ordinance provides for no credit for health insurance for that 460. The 500 that you accrued before that date is, depending on which bucket's in, either worth 100% value or 25% value, depending on which bucket it's in. And so the answer to your question is, if you started here in January of next year, under this proposal, you'll be able to accumulate 960 hours of sick allowance, but if you never use any at retirement, it's not worth anything to you.
Correct.
If you already have 960 hours, and again, depending on which bucket, which number one or number two it's in, and you never touch it, the 960 hours is of a value to you, either 100% or 25%. And then the last complication is that if you have, you know, 1,500 hours here right now, and you start using it while you're working here, we take it from the first bucket first. So it's a first in, first out. So that we're diminishing the 100% payout bucket to save the county as much money as possible, frankly,
mm-hmm.
and use that up first in terms of an accounting sense when we're looking at what you're entitled to in payout at retirement.
So why didn't you go last in, last out, and let the person who has 100% use that for credit versus going first in, first out? In other words, you
save.
I know you're trying to say no. Mr. Chairman, I'll tell you why. Let the lawyer say this one, huh? Back. Come on. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Is that okay with you?
If you can answer the question.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, first, I mean, yes, I'm a lawyer, but this is not a legal question. It's a policy question. But
okay.
The work group was asked to recommend policy, so that's what we're doing. We're recommending policy. I would say in a big picture sense, a step back, what I see happening at the county for the last number of years is the county board and the county executive together trying as aggressively as possible to reduce post-retirement health care expenses, done it in a number of ways. This recommendation just follows that trend, and it does the most we can do to reduce post-retirement health care expenses. There's no way we can reduce it any more than this proposal, in my opinion, legally. And so that's what we've done. We've been as aggressive and followed what we believe to be the policy direction we've gotten from the county board and the county executive. Obviously, you can step back from that, do a last in, first out. It's more favorable to the employee, less favorable fiscally to the county. That's a policy decision. But the reason for our recommendation is because we've gone as far as we think we can go to eliminate or reduce retirement health care expenses.
My last question, Mr. Chairman, is So in other words, if the employees do not use their sick time, they just SOL.
If an employee does not use their sick
time. In other words, they plan to be here, come to work, they accumulate these hours. If they ever use those sick credits or sick time, they SOL, correct?
And with respect to retirement benefit, that is correct.
All right, thank you.
Okay, we have one speaker on this item. We have Ms. Patty Young.
Patty Young, I am the Director of Public Policy for AFSCME District Council 48 and also appearing.
Jeff Weber for the Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals.
Okay, Jeff, we can have you fill out a card. You can do that after you're done. Go right ahead.
Chairman, members of the committee, I think I want to make one point before I make any other comments because I think it's getting sort of missed in this process. Anyone that was hired after January 1st of 1994 who was an AFSCME member is not entitled to paid health insurance. Anyone who was hired after January 1st of 1995 who is in the Federation of Nurses and Healthcare Professionals is not eligible for any paid sick or any paid insurance at the time of their retirement. Those two policy issues were put into the respective contracts as a means to curtail costs. In exchange, at the time that those bars or those limits were put into the respective contracts, what we then did was that instead of them being able to cash out their sick leave, they were able to use 100% and convert it to allow them to pay their own post-retirement health insurance. So they were not going to get health insurance paid for by the county. They were not going to get cash out of their sick leave. They were instead going to be able to use the amounts of sick leave that they had and convert it into self-pay of their retiree health insurance. That was the deal. What we are asking for both the Federation of Nurses and AFSCME is that in consideration of the bifurcated benefits that these two groups get, is that those individuals who are post 94 in the case of AFSCME and post 95 in the case of the Federation of Nurses and Healthcare Professionals be allowed to accumulate sick leave beyond the 960 hours, but only for use for paid health insurance at the time of retirement. Not to cash out, not to be able to use it when they're an active employee, but simply to be able to have yet another pot that could be accumulated so that they can properly plan for their retirement futures. That is what we are asking to be amended. We're not arguing with the 960 hours. We're not arguing with whether or not as pre-94, pre-95s, you should be able to liquidate more time or whatever else. You know, we are simply saying for those people who do not get paid health insurance that they be allowed to retain more than the 960, but exclusively for the use of paid health insurance at the time of retirement or self-pay of health insurance at the time of retirement. And I guess I'm going to sort of throw in two other things. First of all, we often talk about this work benefits work group. I think for at least our edification, we'd like to know who sits on that and how they were appointed and if they're all internal or if they're external people or not. I think that that would be very useful just in terms of disclosure. And I think also this points out to what both the nurses and AFSCME have been saying for some time is that the need to have some process where we meet and confer as allowed for under Act 10 would not cause this process to be so fragmented. In the city where we have meet and confer, we were able to literally deal with A to Z on all of the impacted benefits in a much more systematic and thorough process by making sure that we dealt with all of them in one process. And I just would again urge that the meet and confer would be, you know, considered, because I think that it would save a lot of problems in the future, and certainly in terms of the morale of your workforce, I think it would make them feel that it's a much more comprehensive process as opposed to picking off the low-hanging fruit and they get zapped with another thing. But I, to make it very clear, the thing that we are asking for is that those individuals who do not have any health insurance at the time of their retirement, they be allowed to accumulate beyond 960 hours, but only for the purpose of using that amount for paying for their health insurance. And we would ask that
Supervisor
that makes...
Supervisor Smith, followed by Supervisor Mayo.
We're back kind of to square we were a couple of months ago. I asked most of these questions a couple of months ago about the short-term disability, about the number of hours, the work. Now, for work group for public disclosure, we can I can ask one person to answer. I mean, I know Mr. Hare, Mr. Session,
Grady.
Mr. Grady, Mr. Hanchek, and anybody outside besides inside?
Go ahead, Mark. Well, let me just say this. The work group was established by planning board resolution.
Right, okay.
But in terms of outside input, we have on occasion had access to external inquiries. Other than that, it is an internal work group of executive and legislative staff.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Well, and we have come to rely on this work group. We've asked them to do many things. And I think we need that council. This is... I asked these kinds of questions, like I said, almost all these questions we're talking about 2 months ago. And I know even last month when you left, you said, well, that was kind of the implicit, then we laid over, say, well, let's make sure the union and the work group and administration gets together and does something. I think the county executive was pretty adamant from the very beginning. He didn't even want the 960, and that's what we questioned and talked about. So I think we've come to compromise. I've continually asked to get more information or from the work group, and I think the work group, we question 960, I mean, how many hours it would be. I think there have been compromises made. And, you know, I have to sit here as I understand from your perspective what you're saying, and you need to represent your constituents. And I think the board has tried to do that as well, to be sensitive to that. It's just the long-term liabilities we have is something we've had to look at in the last few years. I mean, so many of our people, that you know, the pre-94s get paid-up insurance for life. That's a terrific liability we have, and that's a major reason why the last two county executives in our last budget, we put everybody in one program so we could get something from those people. You know, as far as co-pays and deductibles and stuff. So it's just a terrific liability we have, and I. You know, we're put in a position here of trying to be fair to employees, and you know, I asked those questions before about can, because I know situations where 960 is enough. Someone has a very serious illness, and I've been to the bowl-a-thons or pitched in, and many departments have done this over, you know, some instances where people used all that up and they needed help and they've been given help, and they still can get it. And I was glad to hear that. I thought that was the case. So, you know, we're as usual put in the kind of the uncomfortable position here, but you know, we have to make policy and we have to take a stand. I just think that you know, the numbers, now we don't have the numbers, usually we'd have a fiscal note, you know, with your idea, okay, let's put the post 94s, although you know, just going to use for paid up. Well, what's the fiscal ramifications? I think we got a little bit of liability from Mr. Mansky on that, and maybe for what it's worth, maybe we could just review that again for my edification. I just think we've come to a crossroads here where The work group has clearly stated their philosophy, and it's a policy decision we have to make. Not an easy one, but we have to make. Okay. The county executive has already, in my estimation, made compromises. He's taken a stand. We need to do something about these liabilities, unfortunately. So I guess my only question of all this, and I struggle with so many things in this one too, and it's a complicated situation. But it's a situation that we need to take. We have done in the last few years try to do something about our long-term disabilities. It's a concern we have to keep our government sustainable, and that's the reality of things. And that's why, although I would begrudgingly, you know, think this isn't a perfect world, and some people maybe aren't getting it enough as they should, especially if you don't, you know, and I know we're penalizing here, in my opinion, and very unfortunately, the person who comes to work every day and doesn't use their sick leave. I don't see another alternative, however, and especially, you know, if you want to open it up and look at the other possibilities, we've had it. This one of the major things we looked at, you know, is the, abuse of sick leave, unfortunately, or, you know, it's been, and we tried to scale back on that, and I think this is the compromise that both sides, the work group that we respect that put so many hours in for us, and with a county executive stand, I don't think this is going to change. So my only question, please, again, thank you for listening. I'm trying to think for myself here again, too, in all these situations. And, you know, we've tried to answer these questions for several months, okay, is that there is a liability question here by going to post-94, of course. And could I get that reviewed again? So if indeed we would entertain what respectfully I understand, and I appreciate what the nurses do and all our employees, I really do, but what would that mean to us, bottom line? Again, that's my final question. Thank you.
May I just make two very brief statements? With all due respect, our members are constituents of Milwaukee County as well. Both as taxpayers and as voters and as employees, and so they play a very unique role in policy because they're affected from multiple aspects. But certainly, they are your constituents. And the other thing I will say, most of you know I've been around for a long time. And I've been through lots and lots of supervisors and lots of county execs. And I will say I think that it is unfortunate that I think, from my perspective, we have less communication and conversation with the third floor at this point than any time of my career. And I think that that is unfortunate. And I think that is something that, if it's not corrected, is going to cause a great deal of this process taking place. And I know that is something that is shared not only by AFSCME, but by the other collective bargaining groups. Thank
Ms.
you.
Mr. Torhart, would you like to pull a chair up and maybe respond?
You know, I know that our chief of staff had met with some union heads earlier in the year. I don't remember when. It was post the request before this meeting. I did not explicitly talk with him about exactly what happened. While we respect the union's stance for their represented employees, we also believe that there are other constituents, and this is a really generous benefit that we're providing for our employees. 960 hours is 6 months of paid sick time. That is pretty much unheard of in the private sector and a standard in public sector. The payout of sick time is definitely something that has been compromised and reached to an agreement in the past, and right now we're in a position where we need to compromise again. And it's not something that we take lightly, but it's something that we have to do it a balanced approach in trying to maintain services for someone who may not vote, who may be taking care or were taken care of at the mental health hospital or the transit users. I mean, there are a lot of things that we have to balance, and we feel like this is a compromise that protects our employees and protects the taxpayers.
Supervisor Smith?
Well, the question remains, it's not for the county executive, but yeah. I guess they didn't do the numbers, but I mean, Mr. Manzik gave us a glimpse, I thought, of the numbers if we would go along with this thought or opening up and looking at post 94, what the unions just have asked us about. That's
and
the question.
If I could just one other on that 960 cap, I think we put ourselves at risk of if we allow people to accrue hours over 960 for use of health care benefits, will people appropriately use their sick time? Will they come to work unhealthy and cause the employee workforce to maintain? I mean, it's just a balance that we need to think about in when we say up to 960 you can use as sick time, and then above that you'll be paid out for health care benefits. Will there be a portion of the population that does not appropriately use their sick time? And, you know, we are going to be asking a lot of employees who are healthy. This definitely is a compromise for them. But sick time is a protection for people who are ill while they're employed in Milwaukee County. Maternity leave, chronic conditions, surgeries, and things like that.
If I may, just one quick comment before Mr. Manzik addresses your question, because I think it's relevant to that question. And this is from me personally, not from the work group, because we haven't discussed this, but I think they would agree with me without asking them. If you are going to consider this kind of change as suggested by Ms. Young, I think it's only fair that if you do that, you do it for everybody. That if you're going to allow such a change for post-94 employees, it should be all post-94 employees, the non-reps, all the other small unions, everyone else. I know, but I just we've been sitting here talking about AFSCME and nurses, and my point is if you do that, and if you want to get numbers, I think the numbers should be everyone post-94, not just those two unions. That's my only point.
Are you done with your questions?
Manzik.
Oh, Mr. Manzik.
Then I'm done, thank you.
Okay.
How much time do you have?
Good morning again. I was just making sure I was going to say good morning. what I had indicated earlier, and I have not calculated the numbers. These are based upon the numbers and looking at it and looking at the percentage of people. And I just want to make sure that separated in your minds are this ordinance change, in essence, is doing two things. One is related to the sick leave accrual limit and the sick leave that you can use for purposes of when you're ill or sick while you are an employee of the county. And that's not the issue that I believe is of the concern right now or is of the question. It's regarding what we call the earned retirement, what you get, what you can use when you retire from the county, either in a cash payout or for purposes of buying health insurance. Okay, as indicated, and so if we focus just on the earned retirement, the way that this ordinance change is right now is that there would be placed an immediate cap on the amount that you could use at retirement based upon whatever your balance is as of January 1st, 2012. So if an employee had just started with the county and was going to use it for health insurance at retirement and they had only 100 hours of accrued sick leave and they retired the next day, they only would have 100 hours of accrued sick leave. If they retired 10 years from now and they didn't use any sick days from now until then, they would only have 100 hours. They wouldn't earn any more against this balance. Mm-hmm. So, and if the employee was sick during that time, this proposal is based upon a FIFO basis that it would take from that, meaning The first hours that would be used would be taken from the 100 hours. Mm-hmm. So in the next 10 years, if they were sick 100 hours, there would be no balance that would be remaining for purposes of using a post-retirement health insurance. So what is being proposed is an immediate cap on the amount of payout, either cash or for purposes of buying health insurance. That's what's under this proposal. And as Mr. Grady indicated earlier, this was probably the one that provided the most savings to the county under this proposal. Okay. The dollar amount that if a change was proposed, one of the things that I've heard as a proposal is one, is that what if you remove the cap upon for those people for their purposes of their earned retirement, the amount you use for buying health insurance at retirement. What if you remove that cap, which means the individual that I said had 100 hours, and if they work 10 more years, they could get another 960 hours, so they could have 1,000 hours. You know, it wouldn't be capped at the 960 for them. They could go up to 1,000 hours. What would the cost of that be? So that individual right now has, at 100 hours, has earned, and based upon a $30 wage, they've earned, $3,000 towards purchases. But in 10 years, they would have earned close to $30,000 for buying post-retirement health insurance. Okay? So what is the cost of that if you take that limit away for purposes of using post-retirement? And that's where I've estimated that amount of increasing the liability, not a budgetary impact right now. Your budgetary impact comes when that person retires. But the budget, the liability would increase by about $500,000 a year. But that's under the understanding of what, you know, we changed. We're paying that out right now under the current rules. We are increasing the liability by about $1.1 million a year under the current rules that we have. Under the proposal, we would decrease, you know, we would no longer increase that liability. So under the change that's proposed, instead of increasing by $1.1 million a year the liability, we would increase it by $500,000 a year in order to continue to fund the health insurance, the post-retirement, people being able to buy post-retirement health insurance for those people after 1994 who do not have any post-retirement health insurance with the county. They were given the option of using their sick, not the option, but they were said their sick leave can be used to buy health insurance. And that would be increased in liability about 500. If those people start retiring in about 10 years, then they can start to buy the health insurance. The cost of health insurance right now is for a single employee in a post-retirement is about $500 to $600 an hour for a single, and maybe around $1,500 to $1,600 for a family. So for an individual that has, let's say, maybe 1,000 hours, they could maybe buy, if they're a family, they could maybe buy 2 years of health insurance. And the thing that they're looking at when an individual would be retiring is, under the current rules, they do not have the rule of 75 either. So their option for retiring is age 60. So they'd be looking to say, okay, if I retire at age 60, I'm looking to get to my Medicare so that I'm covered by Medicare. And do I need 2 years? Do I need 3 years? What can I do to get me that bridge to that point where, you know, I can get there? And you're looking at, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years that this could buy you if you take away the limits related to it. So I know it's a long-winded answer, but I'm trying to make sure that you understand. Right now we're increasing the liability by about $1.1 million a year under the current rules. What we were proposing is to eliminate the increase in that liability. But under the proposal where we would continue to fund it for the people who would use it to buy health insurance who are not eligible anymore to receive post-retirement health insurance with the county, the only way they can do it is buy it.
You know, either they can always buy it with their own money, but this way they can buy it using the sick leave. And that's a cost of about $500,000. So the policy that's before you is probably the one that provides the most amount of cost savings, but it's a policy decision of, you know, where you want to go. I hope that's helpful. When we put this together, we didn't break it down by the... I provided some additional data to try to provide some of the breakdown that way, but I didn't go that way because I, you know, I was doing it based upon the proposal that was there and not providing a whole list of options.
Okay. Yes, thank you. Before I make my comment, I think 99% of our county employees do not use the sick time, what they have done here. We have some who do that. I think they have been a very good worker before Milwaukee County. Before we even had a concern about sick payout, they still was accumulating and not tried to abuse the system. I want to know why the work group did not look at NPS or at City of Milwaukee. They have a cap on their program right now that you also can buy sick time for health insurance and also a minimal cap that they would pay out. There's different options that you can look at to make sure that is a win-win for our employees, because you have support employees do more or less. I'm just saying why we didn't try to incorporate. I know we're trying to save money, but the City of Milwaukee and the NPS did similar things. That's it.
Supervisor DeBruin, followed by Supervisor Romo West.
Mr. Chairman, that was a question. Did you want an answer?
I just made
a
statement.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand the fiscal better on this, and I guess this ties into a bigger issue for me, which is the whole collective bargaining change and whether there's going to be a form for unions that still exist within Milwaukee County's workforce to do some sort of meet and confer on major proposal changes. And this is a perfect example. Under the old system, this would have been a negotiated item, and there would have been proposals from the county, proposals from the unions that would have been costed out. And now that that system's gone, what we have now is requests from the unions, but no fiscal from anybody, specifically ahead of, you know, where it's been thrashed out and all the permutations and alternatives are looked at. It. And so what we've got before the committee is really, you know, at least verbal testimony, which I appreciate, but it's just eons different from the past. And going forward, this is going to be a very cumbersome process if every time there's a major change, there's no process in place to get some valid back and forth between our existing unions and the administration. And because their only option will be to come to a committee to ask for a delay in order to get fiscals drawn up. And if there's no communication between the administration and the unions, we won't even have clarity as to what the proposals are or some balancing between them. And so the item will come back. There'll be public testimony saying, well, that's not what we really meant, or we'd be willing to consider option B. And then the committee will say, okay, go back and cost that out. And so... even from a county management perspective, unless you support completely eliminating all unions in Milwaukee County or any discussion with them on anything, that I think there has to a process be put in place. So, you know, I'm more than interested in working with other supervisors to put together some legislation that would outline some form of meet and confer the four areas you've got, you know, that the state law changes were wages, health insurance, pension, and working conditions. And unfortunately, in this example, the one area where I would be most supportive of some of the management rights being enhanced is health insurance and sick leave. I think we had some of the negotiations there I actually think should be more of management. But working conditions and other pieces, I don't understand why the state went as far as it did, and so I would hope that we would take this example and put together some sort of legislation that deals with how county is policy-wise is going to deal with our unions, because otherwise we're just assisting in their destruction. So, and I don't think we're assisting county management and the ability of us to function, because we'll have this on every major issue. So I would hope that people would be supportive of looking at that. Thank you.
So that is Roma West.
Thank you. I do have, I just wanted to inform the committee that I'm taking a deeper look at this, and hopefully, we didn't have time obviously to do something with it today, but we'll try to have something by board day. Hopefully some type of amendment.
Alright, what's the pleasure of the committee?
Are we waiting? Is he coming back?
He's coming back, but so about time, it's the pleasure of your owner's report, what you would like to do. Yeah, I know.
Mr. Chairman, I could just remind you that if you are going to move forward, and I don't know if that's the pleasure of the committee, but if you are, I would again request that the amendment I've given you
right.
be adopted.
We do have an amendment.
First.
Okay.
The First Amendment, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. First I'll Amendment.
Move approval
now. Clark, can you read the amendment, please?
The amendment is to add a Section 6 of the ordinance as follows. Section 6, 1718.3, as amended as follows: unless otherwise noted in a collective bargaining agreement, unused leave as provided in 1 of this section shall accumulate subject to 9 and 10 of this section, and struck the words "on an unlimited basis" over the entire period of an employee's continuous service. Unless otherwise specified in a collective bargaining agreement, continuous service shall be considered to be any period of service that has not been interrupted by layoff in excess of 2 years and 1 day, or by voluntary or involuntary separation.
We have a motion for approval of the amendment. Any questions, comments?
Who made that motion?
Supervisor Bruin.
Thank you.
Madam Clerk, on the amendment, please call the roll.
Supervisor Bruin.
Aye.
Sorry. Supervisor Thomas.
Aye.
Bruin was aye. Supervisor Schmidt.
Aye.
Roma West.
Aye.
And Mr. Chair.
Aye.
The amendment has been approved 5-0.
So what's the pleasure of the committee?
Move approval.
We have a motion to move approval as amended by Supervisor Schmidt. Please call the roll.
As amended, Supervisor Thomas?
Aye.
De Bruin?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Roma West?
No.
Mr. Chair?
No.
Motion to approve as amended, 3-2.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Supervisor Bruin.
Can I just briefly say, if there's an amendment that's going to be coming, I would be more than willing to take a look at it, but I just had to follow my policy of not, I'm not going to support major fiscal amendments that aren't in writing, so hopefully there'll be a fiscal note attached with it, but that's why I voted to the way I did this afternoon. Thank you.
Dear noted. Anything else on item number 10?
Nine.
That's not, Mr. Chair?
Okay.